You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
I do think there's sometimes that stigma, you know, to be successful in this business. You run into a lot of people that, you know, don't necessarily have families or kids, or because it does consume your life and you can allow it to do that. And I think it's really great to see, you know, these up and comers that have successful operations and have families that involve their children and show that other side of things that, you know, you can do this with the kids and involve the kids. And honestly, they are the future of what we are doing. And it's a little bit of a dying breed.
Hey, bird dog babes. My name is Courtney Bastian, and I am obsessed with all things bird dogs. And I'm here with you to share the stories, experiences, knowledge, and opinions from the women and a few guys in the industry that are killing it. I'm a Wisconsin girl living in a Montana world. I'm mom and two incredible kiddos, wife and occasional assistant to a pro gun dog trainer, traveling the U.S. talking about canine nutrition while hunting, breeding, and competing with my German wire hair pointers and Bronco Italianos. As someone who started hunting later in life because I wanted to give my dogs the opportunity to do what they were bred to do, I'm here to help inspire, educate, and connect women to get their bird dogs out in the field and experience a bond like no other. So pour yourself a glass of wine and get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn. This is the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. A big shout out to the people and partners that are helping me keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. Dakota 283 Unparalleled Protection Rotomold Kennels. My favorite is the G3. It has a molded-in, easy-to-grab handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed paddle latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I run into the gas station or a restaurant for a bite to eat and I'm not able to bring the dogs in with me. Go to dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that make shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. Newer seasoned hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. And while you're there, say hello to Julia, Siren's new 12-gauge sporting that is one of the most stunning shotguns I've laid my eyes on. Also by Big Frig, roto-molded coolers with heavy-duty latches, dual stainless steel lock plates that double as bottle openers. They also have dry boxes, tumblers, and growlers. And my favorite, the ability to customize the tumblers and coolers. Head to thebirddogbabe.com/Big Frig. To view the wide array of sizes and colors available, there's a Badlands cooler perfect for your way of life. This episode is a compliment to last week's, so if you haven't listened to episode 45 with the girls, be sure to listen to that next. Today, my husband, William Bastian, has taken over the mic for Guys Night, and while he has decided he has no desire whatsoever to host a podcast, I think he did a great job. And he is joined today with Jason Marzoff of Marzoff X Kennels, Tate Martinson of Martinson's Red Point Kennel, and Ethan Pippett of Standing Stones Kennels. This is a great episode about their perspective as dads, husbands, business owners, reputable breeders, and some of the best damn bird dog trainers I know. All right, let's get after it.
All right. So the men behind the Bird Dog Babes are taking over the podcast tonight. I'm not sure why my wife picked me to do this, being that I'm a super introvert here. But let's kick it off by introducing all of us and our businesses and what we do.
I'm Jason Marzoff, We're in South Dakota. We own Mars Off-X Kennels, myself and my wife, Megan. Together, we raise, train, and breed German short hair pointers, along with several other breeds of upland and pointing dogs.
Tate Martinson, we own, or me and my wife, Jenny, own Martinson's Red Point Kennel. We breed and raise Vizslas and train pretty much any type of hunting dog, kind of more towards the pointing dog side, but we still get some of the flushers and stuff in.
Hi, everybody. I just want to say thanks for having us on the show here. But my name is Ethan Pippett, and my wife and I own Standing Stone Kennels. We're in South Central Kansas, and we kind of do a little bit of everything from training dogs to training people to train dogs through the internet. And we are short hair people by breeding standards, if you will. But like y'all kind of talked about already, we do train a little bit of anything that comes through the doors.
So how did you guys' hunting seasons look like this year? What do you guys get out and chase this year?
We got the opportunity to hunt a little bit of everything from, you know, kind of started off early with some sharp tails, and then from there moved up to hunt pheasants, and then pheasant quail in the state of Nebraska and Kansas, and then finished out with a little bit of quail hunting down south this year. So kind of rolled around and pushed a few Midwest, if you will, Midwest birds.
Awesome. Quail are some of the species I haven't chased a ton of yet, but that's something I'll go run around later. How about you, Jason? What did you get out and chase this year?
Mostly upland birds. You know, South Dakota here, we're known for our pheasants, a lot of pheasant. And then I'm a huge duck and goose hunter too. I like to field hunt, waterfall hunt the ducks and geese. So that's the majority. I didn't get a lot of opportunity to leave the state this year due to work shortages with the COVID and all of that. We've been putting in a lot of extra hours, and so it really hasn't left the opportunity to plan a whole lot to leave the state this year. So yeah. we don't have any quail up here. You know, you get out by the river, you've got some of the prairie chickens and grouse and that stuff, but that's about the extent of it this year. It was actually a pretty slow year.
Yeah, and I started off the season, got into some sharp tails, and I've shot only a few prairie chickens through my hunting years and stuff, but we got into a couple nice big coveys of prairie chickens for a nice couple hunts, so that was a good time to start off the season, and did a lot of pheasant hunting. Obviously, that's primarily the only bird we have here in South Dakota, so I shot a lot of pheasants this year, had some luck, and then kind of capped off the season, headed down south a little bit to Nebraska and Kansas, and got into some Bob Whites and got some of the pups and stuff on those. They're a fun little different bird to hunt, which we don't get to hunt here, so really enjoyed it down there. I had a pretty good hunting season with everything, with it all and everything going on this year.
Awesome. I have been dipped into a lot of new species living out in Montana now, so it's been a lot of fun trying to chase these new species around on a regular basis, but you name it, we probably chased it around this year. Grouse and sharp tail and blue grouse, it's been a good year.
You got any good spots to run into some Huns?
Yes, I actually do. We did run into quite a few Huns this year. Huns were up this year for quite a bit. They were finding them places where people haven't seen them for quite a few years, which is a great, great sign for the years to come. But yeah, we do have some pretty good areas for some Huns. They are one of my favorite birds to chase. That's for sure. But what are your guys' favorite birds to chase?
That's tough. It's a tough one. I think for me, it just comes down to, and this is going to sound like one of those kind of BS foo-foo answers, right? But anything I can chase with my dogs, I'm really a big fan of. It's, and that comes down for me primarily prairie-based birds. I like early season, getting the opportunity to chase prairie grouse around. I like once pheasant season opens in the Dakotas where y'all are home. Down below here, you guys get to see that on a regular basis where we've got to travel for it, but it's definitely worth traveling for, you know, and then getting the opportunity to go south and chase, you know, Bob Whites in the state here, even further south, and then blues all the west. It's all fun. It's all different. So it provides a very unique experience. And if I can be doing it there with my dogs, it's enjoyable. I think there's some other birds in other countries that have kind of, you know, dreamed about that would be fun to go do. But some of the big issues with that is I can't take my dogs there. You know, there's Franklin in Hawaii seems like a cool thing, but getting your dogs there is difficult. I don't want to go hunt over somebody else's dogs as much as it would be fun to do with my own. So.
Yeah, we definitely are a different niche group here where we, you know, we probably wouldn't enjoy hunting over other people's dogs rather than our own. So can't bring your dogs. I'd rather stay home.
But yeah.
I understand that for sure. Well, Valentine's is right around the corner. So we can bring our wives into this a little bit about, do you guys go out hunting with your wives a lot? And how does the dynamic go out there when you're hunting with your wives?
I would say it's interesting at times, if anybody knows my wife. This year, with her being pregnant, we didn't do a lot of hunting together. She didn't get out as much as she'd like to, but over the last couple of years, we would hunt quite a bit together. Then there's the problem when I want to go on a trip, want a guy's trip, well, she wants to come along too, so there's always that interesting feat. Then she, when we hunt something, I kind of have my way of hunting and this or that, and then she thinks she has hers. So sometimes we butt heads, but all in all, it's always good. It's fun to be able to get out with the wife and connect and just go out and enjoy it. We really enjoy it when all goes well.
Yeah, it's a different dynamic with the wife, but it can be a lot of fun. My wife's really, actually, my wife got out more than I did this year. She got out hunting a lot more than I did this year. She had the time, and she had the time. I let her go, and she learned a lot, which was great. I loved watching her kill her first hunt and, you know, drop her first certain birds. It was just a fun thing sending her out on her own sharp tail hunt all by herself, and her figuring out and finding some great cover all on her own. It was fun. It was neat to see. So now we have two people going out scouting instead of one, which is a bonus.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you all got a lot of country up there.
Yeah, it's one of the main reasons why we came out here, and it's just a blessing each day to be able to get out and explore. My Onyx map will start to get more pins all over the place as years come. So I'm okay with that. So how about you, Jason? Do you get out and go out with your wife quite a bit? And how does that dynamic work for you?
Yeah. So right now with Stetson is two, so he's home all the time. We don't have a lot of immediate family close. You know, before Stetson got here and Melody had started preschool already at 3 years old, we did three-year-old preschool, and that allowed us the opportunity to go out more together as a couple. Now a lot of what we do is individual, myself or her, and our trips are so forth, and the other person takes on that role as parent. Like this year, she drew a deer tag. I did not draw a deer tag. So, I mean, we'd make it a family venture to go out, scout, do things of that sort, but she was pretty much on her own to go out and sit and do her thing. And Megan jokes that I always tell her I can't wait till Stetson starts school, because with my schedule like it is at work, we get the opportunity then with both kids in school to go out during the middle of the week and not have that. So it's kind of one of those sacrifices with the kids around and at the point they are in their life that, you know, that kind of takes a back burner a little bit over that.
Yeah, but even I found ourselves this year taking the kids with us, backpacking, you know, it's not as serious or productive a hunt, but it's still entertaining for that factor of, you know, like I remember going out and finding weird prints on the ground and my son talking to my wife about being dinosaur tracks and, you know, you just go with it, let him have fun with it. And if he keeps walking and keeps searching for tracks, then he can just keep moving along with the dogs along with it. So, you know, that kind of aspect too. Do you guys backpack it too? You know, it's a workout, but.
Yeah. And a lot of it for us is, you know, I leave the beginning of October and I don't get back home from guiding till the middle of November. So we start to get into the later season hunting where it starts to get down into our colder temps. So a lot of it varies on temps then too, you know, for bringing out the cold on how tolerable they are. You know, I'm looking forward to the day when I'm not guiding near as much and we can do more of that early season stuff. It's just a lot more tolerable even for the wife than, you know, late season November, December in South Dakota.
Do you guys find yourself having two different sets of styles of dogs when you and your wife go out hunting? Does your wife have a string of dogs and you have a string of dogs? And how does that work out with dog wise?
But in our house specifically, I would say that we have a fairly uniform goal, as if you will, of what our dogs are. We have individual dogs 100% though. That's her dog, that's my dog, and you know, it's like who are we going to put on the ground? She's like, she's got her picks, I've got my picks. There's definitely that aspect of things that go on. And you know, I would say on average hers don't listen as well. You know, they're more, let's get loved on and whatever else. But they are the same dogs that I take with me when I get the opportunity to guide or run everything else. So they kind of are our dogs, but they definitely shade one way or the other. I would say more in the direction of who's picking which dog to take to the field and who's picking which dog to come cuddle on the couch kind of deal. But
mm-hmm. That's kind of how I see it in our house too. It's two separate strings and she picks her dogs to run and I pick my dogs to run and we drop them on the ground. And we go out hunting together.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
We kind of have, like what Ethan was saying, we have one dogs that are kind of hers or his, whatever. And especially in the house where there are certain dogs that more attention to the wife than me, but out in the field, usually when we go, I usually control all the dogs. I get dogs ready. I put them down. I have the dogs in the collars and control them. She usually just gets to kind of hang back and just enjoy it and go, you know, walk and all that stuff. And it's even gotten a little worse over the last couple of years because she doesn't train as much with me anymore. So out in the field, they don't listen to her as much because she's not out there working them as much as I am. So I get to kind of choose what dogs I put down and run them, and she gets to kind of just reap the benefit and hopefully get behind them and shoot some birds.
Yeah. Man, it sounds like I need to be your wife, Tate.
There you go.
And along the lines of bringing your kids with, along with, you know, I find, you know, that's there's educational basis on that whole thing. And like you said, Jason, the weather permitting to make sure that it's fun for them when they go out there. But, you know, I just enjoy having them come out and it's amazing what they pick up just by us, the way we hunt and what we're hunting in and how they pick up on that things. And we get back home and it's just amazing to hear, you know, what their little brains picked up from just that single hunt. Do you guys see in that when you're bringing your kids out in the wild, even if you're scouting, you know, you may not even be hunting, but to be like, look over here, Dad, you know, there's there's some berries over here. Let's go check out this area over here. There might be some birds. I mean, they're smart little sponges.
With our little man, when I've had him out backpacking, because some of the cover we got to walk is too thick for him to walk. And all I hear in my ear with him on my back is, what that, what that, what that. And I'm trying to explain to him what it is the whole time and still try to go out and hunt. So it is fun, you know, watching them do that. And they do definitely pick up on what you're saying and how you're handling dogs. And before you know it, they're trying to whistle and handle the dogs with you when they're not supposed to be, but it's all the fun of it.
Oh yeah. I get a little girl that sings in my ear half the time when we go hunting and she's in the backpack. No need to bring a radio. She's got it for me.
We took a trip in September up to Montana, actually, and we kind of got some, you know, local tips, if you will, from a few people that have been hunting and everything else. And it's like, well, we need to get, north central portion of the state, and that would be kind of better for some sharp tails, probably get into a few hunts. And when we hit the Montana border, traveling with the little man, right, it's he at the time was just shy of two, not quite two, and it was a fairly big undertaking to attempt that. And we had realistic expectations, I feel like, but at the same time, we hit that Montana border and it's like, there is no way I'm putting another 7 hours on this voyage one way to get to where we're supposed to go. So we started picking some spots, and it was the same kind of thing that you're talking about. It's a different style of hunt, right? It's not, let's go hunt these spots. It's let's get to the spot. Let's get out. Now we have to pee. Now we load up. Now we get the dogs ready. We get everything loaded up. We head out to the field, 100 yards out into the field. We got to pee again. So we stop, unload from the pack. We get out, we pee. Then we see cow poop. Then we see cows. Then we see birds. Look, there's another bird. You know, it's just, it's definitely an adventure, and it's a different kind of adventure. And not that I would probably say I wouldn't want to do that every single time I'm going to the field. You know, I do like to hunt and move and boogie and hunt with my buddies and whatever else, but man, I really enjoy sharing those times and everything else with him. I mean, it was an adventure. And people ask, you know, how was your Montana trip this year? I was like, it was great. We had, well, how many birds did you get into? Like, we killed two in 3 days on, we killed two birds. But I'm telling you what, I mean, between waking up early, going out, letting dogs out, picking them up, going downstairs to eat breakfast at 8, and then going back out, letting dogs out with him and him helping and doing all those. I mean, it was just fun to be able to incorporate him into that and having realistic expectations of what the trip was going to be, right? It's going to operate at a different pace, and going into it with that mindset made it a lot of fun to be there and a lot of fun to be part of. So.
Yeah, that's a brave undertaking, Ethan, to take him on a trip that far away. And and I totally understand, just even taking our boys and kids up just up the mountain behind us, you know, that's a chore in itself, but to take him cross country and stuff like that. But yeah, that's awesome. But, you know, even to think about it, you know, when you take our kids out like that, I don't know about you guys, but I did not grow up that way. I didn't grow up in a real upland hunting home, and I kind of envy my little boy and little girl now, you know, growing up in this whole, all those opportunities. And I just hope they don't take it for granted when they get older. Just like it's there. It's not there for everybody. Yeah,
100%, man. I'm with you. I didn't upland hunt until I was 17 years old. I think was in high school. I mean, it was the first time that I went upland bird hunting.
I grew up hunting, went hunting. I was probably, you know, 10, walking along with my dad that I can remember, shooting at birds probably when I was, you know, just old enough to carry a gun at, you know, 13, 14 years old. and stuff, and had a blast and hunted hunted a lot. Then got a little older and got into high school and stuff, and hunted a lot with friends and all that stuff. But it was different then. There was more birds per se. Didn't really hunt much with dogs, and now it's completely different. Like Ethan was saying way earlier, if I'm going hunting, I want to hunt behind my dogs. You know, not that anyone else's dogs aren't just as good or better, but it's just different hunting behind your dog.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you guys put a lot of time into them.
Yeah, I grew up by Redfield, South Dakota. So, you know, they're always battling for pheasant capital of the world, you know, down there with by the winter area where I think Ethan hangs out quite a bit. And I hunted every day after school. I didn't grow up with parents that hunted at all. There was a friend of the family that kind of got me into the hunting, and I was hooked. I worked on my first farm when I was 12, so I had access to lots of ground, and every day after school I hunted. You know, when I was growing up, I did almost all pheasant hunting. At that time, we had a few coveys of quail down around the Jim River Valley. So I shot my first quail down there along the Jim River Valley. You know, when we circle back to the kids and involving the kids, I think I probably, as strange as it seems, I do more waterfall hunting with my short hairs now for my personal hunting than I probably do upland, for the sheer fact I have some really good buddies who love our children, and we have the opportunity as a family to go out. We can scout fields, watch ducks and geese land. We can set up, they can lay in the blind. You know, it kind of takes out that mobility problem that we have, you know, that we run into with the kids. And it's that, you know, I love the adventure of the upland, and we'll get there with time. But I probably do more waterfall hunting now than I do upland for my personal hunting anyways, just because the kids can be involved almost from start to finish. I mean, you can stuff them in a layout blind and you can put them in one big enough. They can roll circles, take a nap, do whatever they want, and they're not going to affect a whole lot as long as you don't put them in fluorescent pink and they're not running around out in the decoys. And that's, strangely enough, that's mostly what I've been doing.
So let's get into a little bit more here about our family and business wise, because I know we all are probably dealing with the same issues on different levels. But how do you complement each other with a business and as parents, just you and your wife? You know, I know me and my wife have different roles. How do you guys complement each other to handle all that craziness?
Well, I would say on our side, you know, since Jenny, she still works full time, and my job per se is training dogs, but breeding and raising dogs in there too. She really loves the puppy side. Not that I don't, but she really loves that. So she kind of just takes over and takes control of all the puppy sales and talking to those people and raising the puppies and all that stuff and talking to all the new puppy owners, which is a lot in itself. And then I try to the training side. We do overlap a little bit when our schedules get pretty busy and hectic, but we do manage it that way where we try to split up and just kind of take enough business and ownership of each side to keep our heads above water and keep moving.
For us, we just, you know, I mean, early on it was a struggle. As we all know, communication is probably our biggest failure in everything that we do. And it's not necessarily because we mean to be horrible at it. It's just as life gets busy and we have our thought of, you know, our track of mind of what direction we're going, and they have theirs, and they aren't necessarily heading to the same location or destination at the end. So I feel like we've really figured out how to, number one, communicate better, and number two, have a schedule, and we both have assigned responsibilities within the business. You know, I work a full-time career outside of this, and mine's a little different in the essence of I am home a lot, but when I'm gone for 24 hours at a time. So on those days that I'm gone, it's 100% on Megan from sun up to sundown. You know, there's no plan B, from the kennel to our personal dogs, to the kids, to bird chores, whatever it might be. And I feel like we've both found kind of our niche, and we both know, you know, to put it nicely, we both kind of stay in our own lane. We know what our roles and responsibilities are. And if we need help, we ask the other person for help, and they step up and they just take over. You know, I mean, I feel like there's times that we try to take on the world ourselves, and we fail sometimes just because of that. Or I think it's a great opportunity to reach out, you know, and involve each other and say, hey, I need some help here. And we probably all do the same thing, even with, you know, whether it's the kids or training dogs or whatever, we run into a struggle. And at some point you're just like, you know what, I need some help here. I know I'm trying to be super dad, but I'm failing at this. So what are you doing that it works well for you? And I think we complement each other well, because we can jump in and we can say or give a recommendation, and the other person doesn't get bent out of shape about it, you know. Or if somebody's having a bad day, the other person just jumps in and is like, hey, I got this, all the way down to dealing with clients or dogs. You know, we all have bad days, and we all face frustrations. And sometimes it's nice when that person just jumps in, because we don't want to ask for help, but they're willing to give it. And I think it takes a lot to be able to step back and say, you know, maybe I do need that help.
I feel like there's a lot of some similarities and differences between everybody's situations here, but Kat and I are definitely both in this full time, and that's evolved over the years a lot. You know, when we started, it was her and I in a building, well, her and I in some kennel runs and barrels, and then her and I in a building, and then her and I in a bigger building. And then we started to be able to actually incorporate a few people into that. And now we have a handful of employees that make a big part of all of the wheels turning out here. As we've continued to grow, we started our online presence, which has grown a lot and takes a lot of time, as well as an online store to help with that aspect of things. So there's a lot of pieces, and that, you know, how we work together as a dynamic has changed a lot. It's gone from splitting those, you know, day-to-day tasks up to overseeing smaller chunks of tasks, to being able to work again together on a new project and oversee those things. And we do, we in order to make it this far, and this far in our marriage, we got to get along, and we got to communicate well, like Jason said. I mean, that's huge. Communication is absolutely everything. And I think that a majority of issues that we come up against together involve some form of lack of communication. But being able to communicate well and, just help where help's needed is a big part of it. We do a lot of things. There are small tasks here and there that we accomplish individually, but then there are even times where we step in and help each other. So it's just being able to work with that person, and being able to work together makes a big part of how things happen here.
Yeah, totally, Ethan. You know, the communication thing is what, you know, that's a constant battle and a constant in room for improvement. And gosh, I feel like I should be paying money to Google Calendar, because, you know, if without that baby, and I don't know what we'd do around here to be on the same schedules together. That's huge to be able to just plug it in and know what each other's doing at what time. And, you know, we both live separate but still together lives. So it's always a struggle. Too, but I think that communication thing is huge. I don't know about you guys, but my biggest fault is just the organization of all of it coming together. You know, I can take a dog and I can put it together and I can train it and do all that kind of stuff. But when it comes down to the day-to-day organization thing, you know, I don't know what I'd be. I don't know what I'd do without my wife putting me in line and saying, hey, you know, this is, it's been a, it's been a true path to figure all that out. It's taken quite a bit of time, but I think we're running like a decent machine. It's not it's not sputtering anymore. It's running pretty good now, but I'm sure you guys all have run into the same issues with that. All of us have kids in the business, and we all, I'm sure, have taken our role of taking our children out on a day of training. So what's your favorite story of your children being, I guess, less than helpful during training, and maybe a story of being helpful during your training session?
I'll jump in. I would say our daughter Melody is an animal lover, and we have a little bit of a funny farm going on around here. And she, when you talk less than helpful, she has the inept ability to make sure when you're doing an obedience session for send home with a client of bringing any and every random animal that she can find up to show the clients. And it's not so much the distraction of the clients as it is when she's bringing goats and chickens and wounded pigeons that she's trying to nurse back to life or whatever it might be within, you know, 2 feet of a dog that's on a bed for place trait, you know, those little things. And that definitely takes things to the next level. Now, on the flip side, when you talk about the assistants, when we're working with steadiness, utility dogs, finish dogs, whatever it might be, that same behavior is a great opportunity for extra distraction and exposure for correction. I guess it all depends on, you know, the timing of which they choose to utilize it. But, you know, I mean, there's nothing better than doing steady by blind training and bringing your kids with. Because if you want to get a dog that you feel is rock solid to break, bring your kids with and they'll find something to make them break, whether it's throwing rocks in the water or, you know, whatever it might be. They're going to test that dog to the limit, and they're going to find the holes for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to what Jason was saying, you know, and I can't say, you know, our kid's just about 3 now. I can't say I really have a good story where he's been the most helpful at the whole training side. but very good at the whole distraction thing, to a point where, you know, you're trying to do something, and usually if we have him along, myself and Jenny are both along, you know, I'll be trying to, you know, steady up a dog or whatever, and he's supposed to stay by mom and he wants to be by me, so he's kicking, screaming, hollering, and wants to be by me, and then runs up and then up next to the dog, you know, and it makes it fun. They got to be out there, but it definitely has its challenges and all that stuff. And especially the beginning of this year with the COVID hitting, he couldn't go to daycare, but wife still had to go to work, and I still had dogs to train. So trying to train dogs in the building and everything else, he had to be along. So it was definitely a learning curve on how to keep him occupied and get the dogs trained at the same time. There's a definite learning curve there.
Oh man, I can only imagine.
Yeah, treats have been my savior.
Sometimes too many, but you got to do what you got to do.
They work better for kids than dogs.
So let me ask you this: have you guys changed any of your methods, utilizing your children in your training program to help your dogs along? I mean, you got them out there already, so, you know, how are you utilizing them as a tool, maybe, or are you at all?
I think just like what I think Jason kind of hit on earlier, I don't know if we're per se, I'm not necessarily changing my method on how we train them, but we're definitely using those kids as a high distraction rate, because, you know, if they're good during that, you know, during everything else, that's pretty calm, normal stuff for them to be able to go through. So you let the kids go up there, flush the birds, you let them, you know, run around, talk and all that stuff. And they don't know, you know, like when we try to do it, it's kind of orchestrated, you know, kids don't know that they're going to say and do whatever at random. So it keeps it very random for the dogs, to keep the dog's head in the game. And it definitely finds the holes in the, for the dogs, for some of them that can't keep their head straight.
You know, one of the really neat things for us this last summer is The oldest daughter, Rihanna, she's 14. She'll soon be 15. With COVID and all that, she was here for 4.5, almost 5 months without school. They were doing school online. And she's been a big part of being involved with things, but we allowed her to take over in more and more of our obedience training. And to watch the way that dogs respond with young adults, older children, was amazing. And her ability to read a dog and that compassion for that animal and see things that maybe we don't or we take for granted was really neat to see, you know. And I mean, I would honestly say in, 8 years, probably some of the best success we've seen with our obedience dogs. And it was her working with them, you know, and it just a different point of view than what you or I see or take for granted. You know, if somebody calls us and they say, I can't get my dog to recall inside, you're kind of like, well, that's the basic start to any dog. If you can't do that, you're in trouble, you know? And when you get down to that level, and like Tate said too, I mean, we take the kids out all the time. I mean, Melody at 6 on steadiness dogs, she's the one flushing the birds. She's the one shooting a popper pistol, you know, and, she's a 35-pound little girl that has a 16-year-old attitude and personality, but the amount of time it takes her to flush a bird and pull the trigger on that popper pistol is a whole different level than us, you know, and I think it really adds that added level of taking that dog beyond, you know. We always talk about training past that point that we're looking for, and I think the kids help with that a lot. I mean, they can definitely show you your holes and hinder with younger dogs and be a bigger distraction than help. But I definitely think as you get into the more advanced dogs, the kids are nothing but an added benefit.
For sure. And I'm behind y'all just a little bit. Our boy is just a little bit younger and falls into that category of not quite being able to be part of outdoor training sessions, but he definitely has his place inside. He likes to help feed the dogs, which sometimes, I mean, he's getting better at it, especially now, but over, that's a big change over the last 6 months when we started doing, you know, it'd be like, take the bowl of food over, dump the bowl of food on the ground next to where the dog is supposed to be eating it. Like, okay, let's start this again. And now he's doing pretty good. You know, I mean, he knows all of our dogs really well. It's like, take this bowl to Nyx and Vex and Quest. And but as far as incorporated into other training sessions, he doesn't do a lot other than, like y'all are saying, 100%. I mean, he adds a whole new level of energy to anything the dogs are doing, right? I mean, it's, you can do your thing, but the dogs see him and they're just, they take it up like 5 clicks or attempt to, and to be able to work through that, it's a big distraction. It's a big help for help or hindrance, depending on how you're looking at it, for them. So
it totally, at first I totally saw it as a hindrance, but then, you know, and then you embrace it and you're like, hey, this is working to my benefit. And just the fact, especially steadiness, you know, even when my boy was tiny, like 2 or 3 years old, we would take him out and he would ride his gator around, and we'd go out to training days with guys that were training for the Invitational, and gator was driving in between them on point. And I'm like, if your dog can't handle this, it ain't gonna be good at the Invitational, so deal with it. And I mean, it just worked. Yeah, I think it took him to a different level, and I kind of just embraced that through the years. And now take, you know, my boy's 6 now, and having them just go flush birds, and you know, that's if a dog can handle on it with a 6-year-old, they can handle with anybody, really. You know, it's so. Right. I guess that's where I've taken the use of the kids, you know, to my benefit when I'm training, but yeah, totally. But with along that, it's totally been struggles with, you know, you go collect all your birds for the day and get down to the field and you turn around and half your box is missing. And it's like, oh, look at, they're flying, Dad. Yeah. Okay. You know, thanks. That's good. Let's make another trip up to the peak in a little bit and pick them back up again. But it's all good fun. It's I just hope they're picking up skills and life skills for the rest of their life. You know, it's, I'm hoping my kid will never have to learn how to train a dog. He should know how by the time he grows up. But just the whole hope that he's enjoying it and having fun doing it. I just try to, you know, if you want to go play over there in the rocks and the mud, go right ahead. If you want to come help me train dogs, then I'll be more than happy to have you come help me train dogs.
That got me really excited for that age.
you're gonna have two. You're gonna have two little boys pretty soon, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for the reminder. No. We're pretty excited about it. Two little boys are gonna be fun.
I know there's struggles with training with kids and travel and dogs, but what would you guys say your biggest struggle with the whole thing is? The whole business, the whole kids, the business, the training, the dogs coming in. What would you think your biggest struggle with it all is?
For me, it's time. Yeah. Time is it. Making time for work, making time for family, making time specifically for the little man, time. And that's where it seems like if something's going to come up short, we're running short on time for whichever of the activities it is. So
I'd have to agree. Time is a big one. It trying to get all the dogs in and trained and get home and still spend time with the family and then still get attention to your dogs and everything. The time of the day goes by very quick, especially, you know, right now the kids are younger, but it's only going to get busier as the kids get a little bit older and getting into sports and activities and stuff. So time is a very interesting one to try to keep managed.
I think it's coming to that reality of, you know, prioritizing, like these guys said, you know, time's always tough. You know, like with my schedule, I work 24-hour shifts. I work 3 Saturdays out of every 9. I work 3 Sundays out of every 9. That only leaves me 3 weekends out of every 9 that, you know, I'm around all the time. And I think at the end of the day, it's deciding where your biggest priority is. You know, we all want to be successful. We all need to put a roof over our head and food on the table for our family and our kids. But at what point is enough and what is too much? You know, we're never going to get that time back with our kids. They're going to grow up and they're going to be gone and we're going to have time to continue to expand and grow. So I think it's just trying to figure out, you know, where are your real priorities at the end of each day? And that grass is going to be greenest wherever you water it. And that's a choice we all have to make along this path and journey in life.
That brings me to the next question is separating business from home life. I mean, how do you guys separate your time with your home life and your business? Is it even possible at times, you know, how do you guys set your limits?
Limits. for us, I would say, honestly, I mean, that's our biggest struggle and has been for years. I mean, when I started our business, and this is a kind of a goofy thing, but when I started the business, my voicemail on my phone said, "This is Ethan with Standing Stone Kennels. Leave me a message and I will get back with you immediately." And that was my goal. If it dings through, the only reason I didn't answer the dang thing is because I was on the other line or whatever. I will call you back immediately. It has evolved through that process of, this is Ethan with Standing Stone Kennels. Leave me a message. I'll get back with you as soon as I can. You know, I mean, it's hard to shut it off. I mean, it really, really, really is hard to shut it off. We have made, I think having a little boy, having a child, adding to the family has been the best thing for that aspect of things because it gives Kat and I both something to say, and we got to shut this off. It isn't just should we or can we or do we need to. It's we have to. and it's for him. You know, I mean, I can't be on my phone working, doing everything all day long. I mean, he goes to daycare now, and there's a smaller window during the day that I actually get to spend time with him and us all three as a family, and soon all four as a family. And we've got to be able to take that step back and say, man, it can wait till tomorrow, right? I mean, you don't need to talk to me at 8 o'clock at night or whatever. We can talk tomorrow. I mean, it's just is what it is. And we've put a really, really, really hard effort into creating more time, but it's, man, it's difficult. It's a struggle for me from a business standpoint. I've always been we can do that. Or yeah, let's try and do that. Or yeah, we can make this happen kind of guy. And when you take that aspect of things, you know, stuff just doesn't shut off. And then trying to take that step back, it's difficult. It's very difficult.
I would agree a lot with Ethan. Before the kid is like, it's hard to say no to somebody when they need me, you know, the services that I have to offer to them, you know, so you squeeze in as much as you possibly can. And did a lot of it and worked late, long hours and all that stuff. But then as soon as the kids come around, you know, we Jenny and I try to set goals that, you know, try to be home at a certain time to be able to spend time with the family and, you know, don't need to be taking business calls and stuff at X amount of time. You know, like Ethan said, like 8, 9 o'clock, I don't need to be on my phone talking business. It can wait till tomorrow, you know, and get back to them till tomorrow. So that's the biggest thing, is just manage the time when you can get done what we can when the kid's at daycare. And you do have to learn to say no, or just manage farther and just push them back. Or, you know, sometimes you just can't help them and you got to be okay with it to be able to get home and spend time with the family, which you never get back if you aren't home doing it. So it's just setting goals and saying need to be home at X amount of time, just put the phones away and spend time with family.
Yeah. And for us, we've got the motto, work hard, play hard. And, you know, like both gentlemen before me have said, you know, there's no extra time in the day. You can't create more time no matter how hard we try. And I feel like early on in any business venture, you're a yes man. You're wanting to take on everything you can. You're wanting to make everybody happy. You're feeling like you're needing to, you know, bend over backwards for everything and everybody. And for us, it was, we take dogs March through the end of September, and that's it. October into November, we guide. And then November, December, January, February, we take no client dogs. That is our time to enjoy our family time. That is our time to do the things that we want to do. And that has forced us to, yes, we work very, very hard during a set period of time, but we also have a great opportunity then to focus on nothing but family. Every year we plan a family vacation. We try and invite other people, involve them, and show them that there's a lot of happiness that can be had by taking time for yourself and your family and getting away from that and doing those things. And it took a lot, because it's like, okay, well, we can book up October, we can book up November, we can book up December. And it's like, at what point is enough enough? You know, we've got a beautiful lake 6 miles from us. Between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock every day in South Dakota is a horribly hot time to train dogs. We take the kids and the family and we go to the lake. You know, we just make that a priority at the beginning of the week. We set our schedule for what's going on and what we have. And obviously you have to have flexibility, because dogs don't operate on our schedule and they all progress differently. But I think it's just a personal choice that you have to decide, you know, what is going to be my priority now and what will be my priority later. And we all have a different end goal and a different end game, and how we get there is all up to us, you know. And I think each and every one of us has been very successful with our route we've chosen. And it is, that's time we're never going to get back with those kids. I mean, heck, like I said, I do look forward to when all my kids are in school so we can go do some hunting. But on the flip side, right now, I love the fact that we have no client dogs and I come home and I get to spend every day, all day with Stetson, you know, cause that's going to be over in 2 years. So I think it's all our choices that we make and what we put as our personal priorities.
When it comes down to time. What do you guys all do for your release? What's your outlet from all the chaos that we deal with? What do you guys do for yourself?
Well, this is anybody that knows me knows this about me, but it's pigeons, man. It's me time, and we're not talking family time. It's a totally different thing. But if it's me time, I've got pigeons, and I started into the sport of racing pigeons, and I go out there and I feed them. They've got their own regiment. They eat every day. They get different, they get probiotics water. They get acidified water, basically, through some different stuff. I mean, I go out and I spend some time with the pigeons, stand there and look at them. I mean, they don't talk back. They don't push back. They don't do anything. You just stand there, look at them, you know, pick some up, hold them, look at them, put them away. The breeders wise. And then, you know, this will be my first year, but I'm looking to send them off to do some races and some different stuff like that. So, I mean, that's a me thing. And even the little man comes out and helps me do that on occasion. He's excited about that, helping measure out feed and whatever else. But, you know, that's, I've got a lot of family activities to let go, but as far as a me thing, that's just a me thing, and it's pigeons. And then the other side of it would be, bow hunting. I go out and I sit in a tree. It's just a limited amount of time that I get to do that in the year, but it's a lot of alone time. A lot of guys, you see stuff that, you know, they're like sitting there, oh yeah, just on my phones all day. You know, I kind of try and shut that off. It's like when I'm sitting there, I got binoculars. That's my entertainment, right? I'm sitting in a tree, just chilling, looking for stuff that's moving. And my favorite day doesn't involve a specific kill or a whatever always. You know, I think that's the big thing. And I don't believe that there would be disagreements in the fact that hunting is not 100% about killing, right? But bow hunting specifically, I had one of the greatest days bow hunting this year that I didn't kill anything. I sat and I watched, and a couple pheasant came up and they walked through the grass, and then there was a covey of quail. I don't want to romanticize this too much because I'm not really that kind of guy either, but it's one of those things that I saw the pheasants, I saw quail, I saw a coyote, I saw a few doe. I was looking for to try and shoot a bigger buck, whatever. And there's a lot of stuff going on, and it was fun. It was fun to sit there. It was relaxing. The weather was nice. All of these things just were, I mean, that was a happy place, right? It was just a place to relax, let go, and just decompress. So
I would say mine's pretty simple. If I have a long, tough, hard, hot day or whatever, get home. I just, you know, and usually if I'm getting home later, if it's a tougher day, you know, the wife and kid and stuff, they're home, is I grab myself a cold beverage or two, and we got a nice little patio out front of our place, and it's nice and kind of quiet, and just go sit out there and let the little man run around. And if he wants a dog out at that time, we can, but just be able to sit back and just relax and make sure everything's put away and done, and don't really have to worry about much of anything, and just kind of wind down and just take it all in and enjoy it while we can.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Tate. It's just turning it off, shutting your eyes a little bit, and just breathing, right?
It is just, all right, everything's done. Let's just take a breather and sit there for a little while. You know, sometimes it's only 5 minutes. Sometimes you get a half hour, but it just wind down, and then, all right, then you can get back to doing what you need to do.
Yeah. I'm fortunate here where we don't have great service, phone service here. So I can get 50 feet from the house, and my phones are done. So if I want to go away, it doesn't take me much to get off the grid. So I just like to go hike, go up in the mountain. I mean, even if it's with the kids, just, you know, there's nothing that can bug me when I'm up there. It's just to be in nature is huge. Hunting is another big release, you know, just a solo hunt, just me and my dogs, and just let it all fall as it goes. And like Ethan said, it's like, it doesn't even have to be productive. It's just to be out there and just to see random stuff and elk and and whatnot out there. It's just like, okay, that was worth the trip. Yeah, it can be chaotic at times, but I think it's important that we all get our time. You know, I know we allow our wives their time, and man, they need it too. So just to allow that separation, and I guess we call it here at the house is me time. You know, I need a little me time. You know, I need some time away from the kids. I need some time away from the business. I just need a little time to just have some me time. And I do believe that's important just to keep us sane for sure. So what is your best advice for young couples? Say they're young couples like us that are, you know, maybe planning to become trainers or getting into dogs, or what's your advice if they would have some hesitation to maybe start a family and get into maybe even a quarter of our chaos that we deal with on a daily basis?
I would say goals, set goals, start with short-term and long-term goals, and make sure when you set those goals that you're reflecting the wants and needs of both members of the relationship and planning for those big life events along the way as you go, you know. I think at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. You have to take each little goal as, you know, a success. You're not going to make it overnight. I don't think anybody sitting here would tell you that they made it overnight. And I think if all of us were probably honest and we dug deep enough, we've all probably had as many, if not more, failures along this path than we have successes. But it's just a matter of getting back up and keep on going. You know, in the dog world's a big world, and build relationships and just keep on moving.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that on goals, and you need to be patient, have a lot of communication back and forth. I know, like, one of our biggest struggles when we got into the whole training side and having dogs around was with our family. It's hard for us to get away. Especially overnights, you know, that we can only be gone for so long because we got to come back and take care of dogs. So that's, you know, you got to be able to, you know, think about that at the beginning, you know, and especially at the beginning, it's tough. But as you get a little bit farther into it, get a little bit bigger, you can get some help, you know, so you can get away. And now we're to the point that we do have a little bit of help. So it's easier for us to get away. So it is easier for us to do that. But you have to communicate with each other and even family and all that stuff. And it's any business. You got to be patient and just keep going and do what you can.
Yeah. I mean, y'all got really good things to say. It's one of those things that when we started out, I was subtly cautioned not to do it. Right. It's too hard, it's too much work, you won't be able to do this, you won't be able to do that, and so on and so forth. And really what it comes down to is you have the drive, desire, and passion to make this your life, which is what it is. It's not a career, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. I mean, like Tate's saying, and you need help or you need somebody. I mean, it's a dang near an act of Congress to take a vacation. you got a lot of pieces in play, but at the same time, I wouldn't change it for the world, right? So to make that decision for somebody else, like it was caution to me, I don't think it's fair. But I would say if a young couple or a young individual or a single person or any of those people are interested in this, it doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen in a single event. You don't go, hey, I have this dog and I trained it and it does really well, and everybody compliments me on how well my dog does, and I helped my neighbor with a dog and now I'm going to be a dog trainer, right? I mean, it's not how it works. So you go, and I know, buddy, you know all about this, go and apprentice somewhere, go and work somewhere. Take some time, put some effort into it, and say, yeah, now I've spent the time and I know this is what I want to do. Or, you know, maybe day to day dealing with dogs in and out and whatever else isn't for me. And like, even when we've interviewed a few people for help and that aspect of stuff, you know, it's like people are, I love dogs. That's why I want to work for you. I love dogs. I'm like, okay, love for dogs. That's fantastic. What about dog poop? what are your feelings on dog poop? Right. I mean, it's a big one here. So it's just, you're interested in this. You see the glamour, the excitement behind spending your life working with dogs and everything else. That's fantastic. But that's for you. I'm happy for you. Take some time, go either work for somebody for a while or apprentice somewhere for a while and make sure it's the right thing for you. And if it is, fantastic.
Ethan, you hit that on the head so well with the apprentice thing. My 14-year-old daughter, every one of her friends thinks she has the best job in the world. In their minds, she gets to play with puppies all day long. And she will yes. tell you, yes. And she's like, they don't know what it's like to pick up poop, to pressure wash kennels, to clean puppy pens. They're like, they think it is the best job in the world. And she loves doing it, but it is a good reality check for her and people's perception of what we actually do. And even since she's become more indelved in it, she will be the first to tell you that she had no idea all of the work that went into it. And she's been raised around it and with it. But now that she's an active, functioning, working part of it on a day-to-day basis of operation, you know, all the way from going out to, we tell her the night before, this is what we need for killbirds. This is what we need for homing pigeons, you know, and it can be a workout in itself, just going out and having to catch birds. And all of her 14-year-old friends think she has the best job in the world. And she's thinking, you're crazy, because this is way more work than you know. And so I do think that's a great idea. Everybody looks at it and they do like, well, I love dogs. It'll be fine. I can do anything because I love dogs. And it's a totally different world than that.
I totally agree with Ethan. Actually, that's how I met him. I met Ethan when he was working initially for a trainer, and I had been training my own dogs for years. And then, you know how that goes, you know, you train your own dogs and then you're doing well. And then somebody else is like, can you help me? And pretty soon you're training everybody else's dog in your whole club. And you're like, hey, mate. And then you get people and, hey, can you train my dog? Can you do this? And pretty soon you're like, well, maybe I can do that. And then I took that avenue that Ethan suggested, and I went out and I apprenticed. I wanted to see what a big kennel was like, handling multiple dogs and a lot of poop, and just to see how that was all going to be like. You know, that's the true test of, you know, man, I lived in your guys's lawn, not your guys's, but the kennel laundry room for a while, just apprenticing. And,
yeah.
And if I can handle that, I can run my own, no problem. But actually, you know, that was an awakening, you know, that this is how it can be. You know, I'm obviously not going to start that way, but if you wanted to grow to a big operation, and I would definitely suggest that, to go find a reputable trainer and or multiple ones at that, and go work for them. I didn't ask for no money. I just wanted to kind of see, what it was going to be like, you know. I mean, I had some skills and I knew I'd learn a few things along the way, and I did, but yeah, totally go apprentice and see what it really is going to be like at its bigger effects before you start. And even if you just want to stay small and you're just thinking about, you know, having a little breeding program yourself and your own dogs, I mean, there's still chaos and stuff in that too, but maybe go talk to some breeders that deal with it on a day-to-day, and maybe they need some help or whatnot, to just see what it all entails before you dip into the world. But it's rewarding. Don't get me wrong. It's been great. I don't know if too many people, I stepped away for a while and decided to, you know, take the family business route and see if that would be a better path when, you know, when we had kids. But, you know, I earned and just kind of, I missed it. You know, I just couldn't stay away from it. And I found myself, you know, working full time and still training as much as I could in the background. And, you know, it just, I knew where my heart lied, and, you know, it just, it brought me back to doing what we're doing again. But, it takes a special person, no doubt about it, but I can't say enough, you know, to what you said, Ethan, about just go out and try it. You know, there's plenty of trainers out there that'll take you and put you under their wing and have you help. You know, we're there's always plenty to do around kennels.
No doubt, man. I don't think anybody here could argue with that. Say again, Tate.
I said, there's not always the glamorous, but there's always plenty to do around the kennel.
Yeah, 100%, man. I don't think anybody would turn down help. You want to come out and help me? Sure, buddy. Well, bring it on. We need help.
You know, like we were saying, it's not just, you know, Pete, like I said, it's the dogs, love dogs. Well, in order to have dogs, you know, and train hunting dogs, you also got to have birds. So then there's a whole nother part of that where you got to be able to house and take care and have birds, and that's a whole nother aspect of trying to clean and take care and feed all them too, which I wouldn't change over a thing, but it's not as easy as what you think on paper until you get down to it and actually live it.
Well, and everybody loves the thought process of, like you said, Tate, loving dogs. But let's face the reality that a large portion of the dogs we see are brought to us because the owners can't train them. So you're not getting, you know, this easy, lovable dog. We all know that when you get those ones and you're thinking, geez, why'd they even bring us this dog? You know, it's a lot of what we're seeing are those problematic dogs, and those necessarily are not the most joyous to work for. And you don't necessarily end the day saying, man, I love this. You end the day scratching your head and saying, geez, we're going to wake up tomorrow and do this all over again.
And with dogs, you don't get to decide if you want to have a sick day or not. If you have a kennel full of dogs, they still need to be tended. You just can't say, I'm just going to sleep in today. You still got to get up and do chores. It doesn't stop because you want it to.
Yeah, 100%. And this isn't an attempt at a brag situation, but exactly what you said, there is no sick days, right? So we're out there. One time, I don't get sick very often. Okay. Pretty healthy guy. Try and stay healthy. Wash my hands, cough in my sleeve. Don't touch my face. All the things, right? And there was that exact situation, sick as a dog. If I worked any place else in the whole world, I would have called in, right? And it's like letting dogs out, puke in the sink in between, letting the next set of dogs out. You know, it's just, there is nobody to cover that until you can find some good people, but good people are hard to find, you know what I mean? And good dog people. So,
you know, and we all, you know, maybe we all touched on some of the, you know, negative or hardship sides of it, you know, but then there's always the plus side of meeting a lot of good people, good dog owners, just getting to train a lot of good dogs. There's always the fun upside of it, but you got to be able to take the good with the bad when it all comes and doing this stuff.
Yeah, we all get those 100%. Dogs. We all get those dogs that are, you know, like you said, you know, why did we get this dog? But, you know, the good dogs come and they go away real quick, and they go away real quick because they're good.
Right.
It's the ones that stay that are more work. But I don't know. I think that's why we do it too, is because, I mean, we love the challenge to try to figure that stuff out too.
Exactly. Like the challenge. And then when we finally do get to break through with the dog, it's very rewarding at the end.
Yeah. It kind of changes your drink at the end of the night. Which one did I deserve today?
That's right.
Deserve. Well, I just wanted to thank you guys for coming on. I can't thank you enough for hearing your stories and stuff. And it's been a pleasure talking to you guys and seeing that, you know, the same struggles and same glories are coming through with all of us.
Hey, thanks for having us. And I think you're exactly right. Every time I get together with dog people, you know, you get to talking and you have some time to chit chat and you realize that you 100% are not alone. Everybody is dealing with the same things when it comes to dog professionals. It's no different. You know, everybody gets those same scenarios. And sometimes you feel all alone because a lot of times you are just with yourself or your spouse or your whatever. And you're like, oh my goodness, how can I deal with all these things? And you realize, hey man, everybody that loves dogs as much as you do is dealing with the same things.
I think it's a good opportunity for the group too. You know, I mean, I think all of us have been out there and I do think there's sometimes that stigma, you know, to be successful in this business. You run into a lot of people that, you know, don't necessarily have families or kids or because it does consume your life and you can allow it to do that. And I think it's really great to see, you know, these up and comers that have successful operations and have families and involve their children and show that other side of things that, you know, you can do this with the kids and involve the kids. And honestly, they are the future of what we are doing. And it's a little bit of a dying breed.
For sure. I don't have a whole lot to add with what Ethan and Jason just said, but yeah, anytime I get with other dog professionals, it's kind of our struggles as everyone else's struggles. It's the way it is, and that's the way I think it'll continue to go for a while, but we'll keep dealing with it and moving on and enjoying it.
Exactly. Where can people reach you guys out at? You know, you guys got some Instagram handles and Facebook pages and you guys all are reputable. I would, if I wasn't in the business myself, I'd feel comfortable sending my dog to you guys, you know? So go ahead and tell where people can reach out to you guys and.
Well, I'll start out myself. I don't have any social media. I stay off of it. The wife does enough of it for the both of us. So as far as that, I know we got Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. I don't know the exact name of it, but I know if you'd look up Martinson's Red Point Kennel, you'll find us just about anywheres, or Martinson's Vizslas or whatever. You look up any of that on the social media, you'll find us, and you'll end up speaking to the wife, Jenny, which she'll do just a fine job. And if she needs to, she'll send you my way.
Yeah, we're about the same. All of our stuff, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, or I think Instagram's the other one, I guess. It's all under Marzoff X Kennel. Our website is marzoffxkennel.com. Feel free to hit Megan or myself up. We have personal pages also, and I'd pick her to talk to. She's a lot prettier than I am and a lot more friendly than I am too most days. So
I'd agree with that.
I was just about to say that. And, you know, us here, we're standingstonekennels.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Standing Stone Kennels. We have a decent presence when it comes to those things and are fairly active as far as getting back to people and answering questions. So, if you need anything, just reach out.
Just wanted to slide an invitation to all of you guys. If you guys ever are in my neck of the woods and want to go chase some Montana birds, just look me up. I'll be happy to take you guys out.
I'm going to take full advantage of that. I was just about to ask you before we got off here, can I get those Onyx maps pins real quick? But I don't want yours. I'm definitely wanting Courtney's because I'm guessing they're going to be better.
He does get out more than I do.
Well, thanks for having us, William. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah, right. Thanks for putting this on and doing it.
I'm not going to make this a hobby of doing podcasts. It's not my thing.
You're going to do it. You're going to do whatever she tells you to do. We know how that works.
The stuff you do to keep them happy.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and tag someone that would benefit from listening. And to help others find this podcast, please give it a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Until next time, Bird Dog Babes, keep them versatile.